You're listening to the Kumek Podcast, hosted by our teacher development team. Enjoy!
Welcome everybody. I'm Reenie, one of the teacher development leads at QMEC, and I'm really delighted to introduce one previous teacher development lead and one other current teacher development lead. And we're going to be talking to you about careers in medical education today. So, Kerry, can I start with you? Would you mind just introducing yourself for our listeners, please?
Yeah, of course. Hi, I'm Kerry Calvo. Some of you may remember me as Kerry Boardman when I was working at QMEC. I've got married since then. I'm now an associate professor at UCL teaching in the postgraduate medical education team.
Brilliant. Thank you. And congratulations on your assistant professorship as well.
Thank you.
Layla, I'll get you to introduce yourself next.
Hi, I'm Layla Abdullah. So I'm one of the teacher development leads along with Reenie, and I started in this post in September, and I'm also a GP working in North London.
Brilliant. Well, thank you. So the reason I invited you both to have a quick chat to me today is because I get asked a lot by our GP teachers, how did I get my job and what can they do to develop a career in medical education? Layla, I'll start with you this time first. Would you just give me and the listeners a little bit of an idea of what your journey into medical education has been like and how you've got to where you are today?
Sure. So I think from a very early stage, so thinking about my days as a junior doctor, I knew that whatever I went into, I really wanted to incorporate teaching into my career. And so in the early stages of my career, I did a lot of teaching on the wards and sort of teaching in practice. So I almost built my experience before actually having a deeper understanding of sort of medical education theory and the literature. So in some ways, it felt like I sort of gained that experience before delving deeper into it. When I was an ST4 as a GP at the Royal Free, I had a post as a medical education fellow where, again, I did a lot of community-based teaching, so similar to what our GP teachers do. And then after qualifying, I did that for a year. And it was then that I sort of realised that actually I wanted to further my career in medical education. Although I loved the teaching, I wanted to learn a bit more about educational theory and that was when I wanted to work in a medical school. So at that point I applied for a job at UCL and I was a clinical teaching fellow for a year there in the GMC unit, so developing assessments and tests of competence for doctors who are referred to the GMC for performance concerns. So that was one sort of aspect of medical education that I learned a lot about. And I started my master's at UCL at the same time. And this was alongside working as a GP. And Kerry was a supervisor on a few of my modules. And that led me to apply for the job at QMEC, where I worked in the Stage 2 team for a couple of years. I ended up doing 3 maternity covers there before applying for the role within the teacher development team.
Brilliant.
So that's my journey in a nutshell.
Thank you very much. That was incredibly succinct for what I know isn't necessarily a sort of straightforward path. Kerry, I know your path has been even more varied. I wonder if you could share with us some of the highlights and the kind of key bits of your journey.
I think that's Reenie's very polite way of saying that I waffle. My journey is a little longer than Layla's, although actually quite a lot of things that resonated with me when Layla was talking just then. So I started in medical education 15 years ago. And at the time I was an academic, I was a GP registrar, and I actually sat on the education committee for what was then the Eastern Deanery General Practice Committee. And they advertised a post for an academic GP registrar placement. So this is before some of the academic ST4 posts existed. And I applied for that post, got it, and so did 6 months as an academic GP reg, working 3 days a week at the University of East Anglia, teaching their medical students on campus, and then a day and a half in general practice in Norfolk. And from there, I stayed with the University of East Anglia as one of their GP tutors, so doing a very similar role to the ones that your listeners will be doing with the QMEX students. And following a year of doing that, I relocated to London and then worked as a clinical skills lecturer at St George's for a couple of years before moving to King's. I then did a post as first the deputy lead and then the lead for the phase three students at King's. And that was when we were still doing the older programme. And then I moved on to becoming the one of the teacher development leads, doing a job share with Rini. And I was in post for, about 4 years, I think, before moving to UCL. And what I've actually done now is moved into more of the postgraduate medical education sphere. So I now teach on master's programmes in health professions education, both at UCL, and I also work as a tutor at the University of Cambridge on their diploma and master's in medical education. And I'm also the continuing professional development lead for the medical school at UCL. There we go. That's me in a nutshell.
There was definitely no waffle there. That was very impressive. And I think, as you say, there are some similarities with Layla's journey. And I think you both knew quite early on that you definitely wanted to do sort of medical education and have a role there. I'm not sure I did, actually. I think I sort of fell into it a little bit more by accident, that when I was a GP trainee, I ended up doing teaching and really enjoying it, and then really being encouraged, because I worked in a training practice, to do a postgraduate certificate in medical education, actually work towards becoming a trainer. And I think that's where I discovered my love for the theory making complete sense to me, and, you know, thinking about some of the things we do intuitively that actually the theory backed up, and other things I thought, well, actually, maybe I might, you know, maybe that theory doesn't work for me, and why not? So I think actually I really, really enjoyed that practical aspect and being able to try out some of that theory with my, and then moved from postgraduate education to undergraduate learners in my practice before I joined King's, which I think just came at the right time for me, where I was leaving a GP partnership and wanting to do something new as well as being a salaried GP. So it was just, you know, really just perfect timing for me. And I just wonder for our listeners whether you could share some of your kind of key moments for your MedEd journeys, just something that kind of might help our listeners.
Something actually that you both mentioned is this sort of sometimes falling into things by chance. And that's actually supported in the medical education literature, looking at professional identities for medical educators. I won't talk about that too much because that's one of my EdD essays at the moment. But there is definitely evidence that shows that most medical educators do get into it by chance and do end up doing practical teaching before they start to gain education qualifications. And I think really one of my top tips for people is, if you think you might enjoy medical education, get involved in whatever way you can. Volunteer to do things initially, talk to people who might be useful. I did a keynote presentation for the RCGP student conference a few years ago, and that was about medical education careers. And I called it Cheek and Charm, Chance and Challenges. And it really is about that. It's about sometimes asking for what you want rather than waiting for someone to offer it. So my GP educator role that I did, they weren't originally going to fund it for the 6 months that I ended up doing it, but I knew they hadn't appointed anybody in the 6 months previously. So I asked the board whether they would consider offering it again. And that was what led to them then offering it in and advertising it. And I applied and ended up doing the role. But if I hadn't pushed for that, the money probably would have just, you know, got lost. So I think sometimes it's really about sort of not waiting for opportunities to land in your lap, but actually pushing for what you want.
I definitely have learnt that from working with you, because actually we were together working. A job share didn't exist, did it? And it was only your idea that, you know, maybe, Renee, you might want to do this job with me, and maybe we could go and ask someone whether, you know, Anne Stevenson, whether this is possible. So, yes. And I remember you also saying we've got to get used to the idea that people might say no. But, you know, let's go ahead and ask. Leila, I'll ask you the same question.
Along similar lines, I'd say what really resonates with me is the idea of, you know, opportunities and looking for those opportunities, but also not to be disheartened if you don't get jobs. And just sort of thinking back on my journey, there were 3 interviews that I went for where I didn't get the post that I had interviewed for, but that led on to other opportunities. And I think if I had been disheartened by it and sort of let that knock my confidence, I wouldn't be in this role today. Because I think it can be quite easy to, you know, to think, oh, you know, I didn't get that job because I'm not good enough or I don't have the right experience. But actually, don't let it knock your confidence. And if it's something that you really want, I'd say keep looking out for those opportunities and keep building on your experience.
I think that's great advice. You've got to where you've got to, but actually you have had people say, not this time, you know, to you on several occasions, but you knew what you wanted and you sort of kept going. So I think that's really, really crucial too. Kerry, I wonder if you've got any other top tips for our educators, things they should or shouldn't be doing.
I think, yeah, sometimes it's about knowing where to look for things. So for example, if people are interested in faculty roles, so if you're interested in working for a medical school, then it's useful to look on the medical school HR websites to see what they've got advertised, and also jobs.ac.uk, which is where lots of the academic posts will be advertised. If you're not used to looking in those spaces, you may miss things. So that's certainly worth doing. And I think increasingly people are looking now for some formal qualification in education. So it is really useful to start thinking about, would it be useful to do a postgraduate certificate or a diploma or even a full master's programme? Or if you're as mad as me, even going on to do a doctorate in education, you know, all of these things, depending on where you want your career to go. So if you're quite keen to get medical education as a substantial part of your career, then it's worth looking into getting some qualifications.
I think I would definitely echo that. I think when we've interviewed recently, almost everyone had a teaching qualification. So if you don't, you're already slightly on the back foot, even with a brilliant looking CV. Leila, anything you would add to that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think is also important is if you've got a specialist interest in something within general practice, it's really important to develop that. And it's so useful for our educators to have, you know, a particular interest in something and can be incorporated into teaching in so many different ways. So I think it doesn't need to be sort of necessarily separated to either you're, you know, fully a GP in medical education or in just medical education. It's just a great way to sort of incorporate things if you do have a particular interest. So, for example, one of the things that I haven't had as much time to put into that as I would have wanted is sort of elderly care and polypharmacy. It was something that I had a really sort of keen interest as an ST4 and early GP, and I looked after a care home. Unfortunately, just because of my time commitments, it's something that I haven't really been able to pursue. But I think having those interests are so important.
Yeah, and I think if you really love something rather than having to, you know, feeling like it's part of your job role, then you're going to want to do it, aren't you? You know, if it's something you're passionate about. And so, you know, I've really enjoyed over the last few years developing clinical reasoning with our students and with our tutors, and doing stuff about, in more recent years, health inequalities and racism in healthcare. I think that's probably lots and lots of brilliant advice for our listeners, and they can always get in touch with us as well. And Kerry, we hope that you might be able to do a workshop for us in the future so that we'll signpost our tutors to that as well. Do either of you have anything else you want to add?
I think my only other thing, firstly, thank you very much for inviting me back. It's been great fun doing this, and I would be delighted to come and do a workshop. My only other thing to add maybe is think about networking. So it's really useful. I mean, Leila mentioned that she knew me from her master's at UCL. I try very hard with our students to flag up opportunities for them if I hear about them. Similarly, I've had people get in touch. So the person I worked for at the University of East Anglia actually put me in touch with Anne when I came down to London, and I met with Anne and didn't actually go for a job at King's at that time, but it meant that I kept that in mind. And so I think networking is really, really useful, and it's very useful if you can do that at medical conferences, medical education conferences, and even on Twitter. It's a really good place to do some medical education networking.
Yeah, I've been a convert because of you to sort of social media and the benefits. I agree. Leila?
Also, just to keep on teaching, because I think it's so important. So I think sometimes when you progress in medical education, you can sort of lose touch and you do less of it or do it in different ways. But actually, it's so enjoyable. And if it's something that you love and that's what's got you interested, keep on doing it, keep in touch with it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I've had, for the first time this year, stage two students at my practice, so being their tutor, and it is just lovely watching them develop and just having this really lovely safe space with lots of young energetic students in the practice. It, you know, I think it goes both ways, so that's lots of lovely top tips from both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Tweet at us at Kumek for KCL on Twitter. Thank you for listening. See you next time.